Off the Ball, GAA.
You know, people have spoken about the freeze coming off him. Would that affect him? Not an ounce. Not an ounce. Water off the duck's back. And I think that people maybe overhyped that a lot throughout the league because, you know, Aiden was going so well and maybe Aaron wasn't getting that feed of ball. You see when you put ball into that man what he can do with it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
And you're welcome, folks. Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7. We hope you're doing great around the country. What is coming up on the programme today? Well, we got two live and exclusive commentary games to bring you from the Premier League. Our first match, the encounter between Sunderland and relegation-threatened Tottenham Hotspur, kick off at 2 o'clock. Richie McCormack and Brian Kerr will call that one. Then Stephen Doyle and Keith Tracy will be in the commentary box for Chelsea versus Manchester City from 4:30. In Gaelic Games, the Football Championship gets properly into gear today. We'll have the latest from all the matches and the best of the Sunday paper reviews to come as well. And the presenter of the Sunday paper review, Adrian Barry and Shane Hannon, join me for the news round. Good afternoon, gents.
Hi, John.
Afternoon.
One place to start, the Masters. Rory McIlroy back to the pack. Back to the peloton, Shane Lowry also in with a chance of winning the green jacket later on today. I think most of the country will be finding some TV or some Sky Sports feed to watch this evening.
Oh, what a sensational setup. If we weren't so invested in one of our lads actually winning the thing, it might be a little less stressful, I think, JD. But he certainly went from cruising it yesterday, even after the early wobble, where there was like two or three shots in it, to it was around about 20 past 10 last night. Young puts his one in the drink, possibly around the 15th. And, you know, is likely to drop a couple of shots, but stitches his approach and only drops one. And around about the same time, Rory is playing his long sweeper into the 11th and it spills over the little edge of the green and into the water. And you're just thinking, what an amazing swing. It was within the space of about 30 seconds or a minute, those two events. And you just think, wow, this is... gone from a position where Rory is about to re-extend this lead into three or four shots, and now suddenly it's all back on. And as it turns out, like, I mean, Rory played incredibly well yesterday to end up in the position that he's in. Not off the tee, admittedly, was the Wild West. It was all over the place. But the quality of his shots to recuperate from putting himself in a position where he was very much out of holes at times was exceptional. We just don't know what version of Rory's going to turn up today.
I went on Pat Kenny yesterday, said it was over, and then I said famous last words.
But we were getting a little bit carried away on the news round yesterday.
Hard not to. You watch the opening two rounds, and it's reasonable to believe that having won the green jacket last year, that McIlroy, with no pressure on, could turn the tournament into a procession. But he didn't play well, and it appears that it remains a psychological challenge when things don't feel right technically to just deliver in the biggest cauldron that is Augusta National. You can't be a little bit off it.
No, you did feel like maybe this type of day or type of round for Rory could potentially happen. Probably better at happening in the third round than the fourth round. I feel like if last night was Sunday and it had gone to a playoff and he was playing like that, and players around him like Sam Burns and Cam as well, all these players were playing really well. Rory was kind of struggling to stay with them in the end. And
if he hadn't won it last year, it'd be all saying meltdown.
100% we would.
Yeah.
And you would be forgiven for saying that, you know? Like, but
still just think he's the favourite for me.
Mm. Oh, that's a big call.
Now, just he was on the range late last night trying to sort out, he was hitting the ball a lot to the left, so obviously this is an issue technically he's trying to sort in his swing.
I often wonder if that's the right thing for Rory to do. We were discussing it at the Sunday paper review. Sorry, if we were discussing anybody else here, we'd be saying he's out of this tournament. It's just not happening for him. He's found himself in a funk and there's no way he's getting out of it. But the fact that it's Rory McIlroy is the thing that gives you a bit of hope. Like, I was listening to Butch on the commentary when, you know, shortly after that slip on the 11th, he goes over the top of the green on the 12th, again puts himself in a bad position, all over the place, says Butch. He's lost all rhythm in his swing, swing totally out of sync. Like, these are things that for your average Joe, and I'm talking about 99% of professional golfers here, it's week over. Like, you can't get that back overnight. It just doesn't happen. But I think with Rory McIlroy, possibly it is. I wonder about going to the range last night, but we'll see. You know, it might be a man who's better off with a pizza and a nice glass of, what's that wine? Nice wine they had at the...
the one we can't afford.
Rothschild. Rothschild.
Oh, yeah.
$1,100 a bottle stuff.
Well, you look at the players around him, and a lot of the players in his immediate vicinity haven't won the Masters before. Young, Burns, Lowry, Day, Rose, obviously, who beat last year. Like, Scottie Scheffler is only 4 off him and 7 under, and that's quite scary. Patrick Cantlay, your boy as well, has slowly snuck up the leaderboard and sits on 6 under par. He's only 5 off the lead. Like, a swing of 5-6 shots, as we've seen, can happen quite quickly.
Can you really see, though, both Young and McIlroy throwing this away? I can't see both of them throwing it away.
No, I mean, if one, at the minute, if you were to ask me if which one of them is more likely to throw it away, I think it's McIlroy. You know, like Young has been very steady.
I would actually flip it.
Would you?
And that's just
on the basis of having not been there.
Well, McIlroy's had his ordinary day and he's still sharing the lead. And if he if he can find something, I mean, he's behind Bryson last year. I just think he needs to remind himself that he's won the green jacket. I actually don't think, I think this is more of a technical issue than a mental issue at the moment for McIlroy. Strangely, as people would seem. I assume sometimes you just don't have your game. And Patrick Cantlay talked about that. First day he was dreadful and then has found something. So sometimes it is about finding something technical.
Your point earlier, but if this was last year and he didn't have the green jacket and us saying he's cracked here again, I thought his body language was off.
Well, the 11th, his body language was strange.
Yeah.
It's funny because you think that, oh, he's over this now. This is all sorted because he's completed golf. He's won the career Grand Slam. But obviously psychological issues still remain in sport, even if you've done it.
Yeah. And for all of them, by the way, like some of those M's that we've talked about, at times I thought looking at them, you know, Cameron Young is actually going to put the boot down here. Sam Burns is going to put the, like some of the quality golf that we're playing. But Patrick Reed at one point looked like he was going to get in and overtake.
Through three.
Thankfully that didn't come off. But anyway, there was, you know, they have all had their wobbles.
With Larry, we just want him to do himself justice this evening. He's been speaking in the post-match about... speaking to Neil Champ, Manship, his coach, about just remembering just the most important thing is the next shot. And that was really, I mean, the hole in one was incredible on six yesterday. Oh. Second time he's done it at Augusta more than anybody else. Only gets a bit of crystal for it. And then on 15, puts it in the water. You're going, oh, Shane. And manages to make par, manages to par his way into the fourth position.
Can he win it, JD?
Yes. But there's two sides to this, right? He hasn't won a stroke play event with 72 holes since the Open in 2019. So he won at Wentworth in three rounds and he's won with McIlroy in a team event. On the other side, Bethpage delivered a round in the 60s and hold the putt under pressure. So, I mean, he has got the bottle, I do feel, but it's just, can he avoid a silly mistake which he made, remember, on the 4th in 2022, he's in contention and he got to him and the tournament was over. Like on the other day, the first day, he three-putted from 3 feet. So can he avoid silly errors?
He's snarling going around the course at the minute. He's beating himself up about the bad shots. And this is Shane Lowry. And it's probably a big reason that we continue to discuss the fact that he doesn't have more wins on his Wikipedia page. That's probably the reason for it. But you can see him going around. He's blaming the course, he's blaming the ball, he's blaming himself, the crowd. Like, you can tell, but he lives, you can tell what's happening with Shane Lowry by looking at his facial expressions as he goes around. That would be the worry that I'd have for him, particularly in the context of the two tournaments thrown away, particularly in the fact that, you know, a long time between drinks, particularly the fact the nature of the tournament and particularly the fact the difficulty of the course.
Yeah, and then he hits a hole in one. Like, it's just incredible from Lowry, but... What happened at the Cognizant Classic at the start of last month with Shane Lowry, and I think he spoke afterwards about the fact that he was imagining his daughter with the trophy afterwards.
He did, yeah.
And like they say, the Masters doesn't start until the back nine. If he gets in the back nine and he's thinking about getting the green jacket on and pictures with his daughter, maybe he's got over that in the 6 weeks or whatever.
So worried about the Cognizant Classic when I think about Bethpage when he shot around the 60s and he knew that if he hadn't won that match, Europe could have lost that Ryder Cup and he had to deliver that winning putt to retain the Ryder Cup for Europe and the pressure of that. I mean, that's one of the biggest putts of his whole life, maybe even bigger thing than the Open. So that he's done that would give me confidence in him. But he's fourth and he has to go into the 60s today. It was a good day for scoring yesterday. I don't know because they can manipulate the course at Augusta.
It'll be harder today, JD.
First of all, where are they going to put the pins? And also, will the sub-air system drain, because they have it underground, drain some of the moisture out of the course and make it really fast on the greens? And that allied to pressure, which is the imponderable. Like somebody surely is going to go into Scheffler and Young yesterday with 65s. Somebody in that...
Patrick Cantlay, John.
No, never going to happen. In that 6 to 11 bracket is going to shoot maybe 66.
Are they not going to set up in a way that doesn't happen? Is that not...
No, it's always set up fair in the final round. And also, if you were out earlier, before the pressure, when the pressure's off, and when the course is not as firm and as fast as it will be for the later starters, there is that chance to post the clubhouse score to set a target, as Jack Nicklaus did 40 years ago when he was 7 shots back, shot 65 and won. And... it can happen. There's always somebody who can, would it be Day? Will it be Rose? Will it be Burns? Will it be Larry? And Burns is only one off the lead.
Mm. Yeah.
A couple of top tens and majors. Good ball striker, Sam Burns. And hasn't won a tournament in nearly 4 years, but he might be the person everybody's forgetting.
I still fancy McIlroy, lads. I just think if you can get to the back nine, two or three ahead, push on. Like he could still end up winning this tournament by four or five strokes. I know it looks difficult to see at the moment, but if he can get to the back nine with a shot or two lead and push on from there, because he's done it before, well, who knows? But yeah, you'd love to see McIlroy and Lowry both in contention coming into the last few holes.
You've got some reaction from them.
Yeah, they've both been speaking to the Golf Channel last night after his round. McIlroy spoke about how he will approach his final round today and first reflected on a tough Saturday at Augusta National.
Yeah, didn't quite have it today. Yeah, even just starting at the first hole with that soft bogey, even though I had a pretty good drive. Yeah, I mean, the course was obviously gettable. There was a lot of good scores out there, and obviously the quality of the chasing pack is obvious. You know, there was a lot of guys that shot good scores, and you know, there's a lot of guys in with a chance tomorrow. I'm still tied for the best score going into tomorrow, so I can't forget that, but I do know I'm going to have to be better if I want to have a chance to win.
Did you always think it was going to not be as straightforward as it was?
Yeah, of course. Like there's a long way to go. Yeah, and this golf course has a way of, you know, when you're not quite feeling it, you know, you struggle and you have to dig deep. And I felt like I did that on the front nine and made a lot of good par saves. Missed a couple of chances on 8 and 9, but then I thought I turned around with the birdie on 10. And then I felt like I had a pretty good second shot on 11. It just drifted on the wind a little bit and went in the water. And, you know, those two holes weren't great. But, again, I felt like I bounced back pretty well with the birdies on 14 and 15. It would have been nice to, play those last few holes and not make that bogey on 17. But, you know, I still have a great chance. I'm in the final group. And, you know, I just need to go to the range and try to figure it out a little bit. You know, I'd like to think that I'll play a little bit freer, and I'll play like I've already got a green jacket, which I do sometimes. I maybe just have to remind myself of that. But I think as well that the stakes in terms of like the pairing will be just a little bit easier, and you know, the atmosphere out there will be a little bit easier, so yeah, I'm not worried about that at all. I wish I was a few shots better off, but I'm comfortable. I played with Cam the first 2 days, playing with him again tomorrow, and I think it's a comfortable group for both of us.
Interesting, yeah, from Rory McIlroy talk about the pairing. He's going to be with Cameron Young in the final group at 7:25 PM. He obviously didn't really enjoy going around with Sam Burns, possibly, in his third round yesterday, but feels like he'd be more comfortable with Cameron Young. Also speaking after his round to CBS, after a very solid third round of 68, after an incredible hole-in-one as well on the par 3 sixth hole, was Shane Lowry.
Yeah, I mean, look, I knew, first of all, when I finished yesterday evening, I thought I was in a great position. Then all of a sudden, I'm seven behind. And but I knew I could go out and shoot with a number today. And like, it's not easy to protect the lead out here either. You know, as you've seen today, a lot of guys made a run through the field. When you're going out there, been able to attack and kind of freewheeling a little bit, it makes it a little bit easier. So yeah, I'm happy with my day. Obviously, I've a huge highlight on my day, but I even after that, I felt like I did a great job of like settling down again and playing my round, and I hit a great tee shot off 7. That was huge for me. And me and my coach have talked about just the next shot. That's all that matters. And, you know, it worked today.
That could have been the hardest part, is settling down that adrenaline after that hole in one. You're the first player in Masters history to have multiple holes in one on this golf course. But talk us through what happened today on 6.
Yeah, I mean, we got there, and that back left pin is tricky, and it was a 182, I think, adjusted, and it was a little chip cut 7-iron, trying to kind of get it coming down just right of the hole and maybe bounce it up on that top tier, and it came out straight at the flag. I mean, it never moved, and, you know, I knew it was pretty good in the air, and then when it landed, it was, and it went in. I mean, it's wild, that feeling. And then, you know, walking down and you have that amphitheater there of all the people on 16 and 6, it's just crazy. Like, I've done a few cool things in the game, and I'm blessed to keep doing it. That was a special day out there today. You know, the Masters on a Saturday in contention, making a hole in one, playing with one of my great friends. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, Shane Lowry speaking to CBS after his third round yesterday. Could we see Rory McIlroy putting a green jacket on Shane Lowry's back tonight? Let's find out. It's going to be incredible. What a moment that would be. But Lowry is with Sam Burns in the penultimate group, 7:14 PM Irish time, they tee off. And in the final group, Rory McIlroy with Cameron Young at 7:25 PM Irish time they get underway. So looking forward to that tonight. We'll move on to football. There are three Premier League games to look forward to this afternoon, with Manchester City having a chance to put pressure on Arsenal in the title race later after the Gunners suffered that 2-1 defeat to Bournemouth yesterday. A win for City against Chelsea would see them close the gap to the leaders to 6 points. That game kicks off at 4:30. Live commentary of that one later on Off the Ball. Stephen Doyle and Keith Tracy calling that one here on News Talk from 4:30. And at 2 p.m. Tottenham face off against Sunderland, while at the same time Crystal Palace host Newcastle and Aston Villa go to Nottingham Forest.
Let's bring in our match commentator Richie McCormack ahead of that first Premier League game of the day that we're doing, Sunderland against Spurs. How are you, Richie?
Good, John, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Roberto De Zerbi's first game in charge of Spurs, and when it comes to the teams, what if he and his counterpart Regis Libéry decided?
Yeah, Roberto De Zerbi usually has it pretty good when he starts in a new job. Three out of his four gigs have started with victories. Interestingly enough, the one that didn't was actually in the Premier League with Brighton, that a 3-3 draw with Liverpool. But today he has wrestled control of a Tottenham side who've been in free fall of late. They've fallen into the bottom three courtesy of West Ham's victory over Wolves on Friday night. Their heads are underwater and they badly need a win today. And with that in mind, he has gone with a rather potent looking front three away to Sunderland this afternoon. Into the side comes Randall Colomwani, who will partner Dominic Solanke and Richarlison up top for Tottenham. That is one of three changes made from that humiliating 3-0 defeat at home to Nottingham Forest that came prior to the international break and then the subsequent FA Cup weekend. The other change is in goal. Antonin Kinski, after a nightmare 17 minutes under the glare of the Wanda Metropolitano lights, has come into the Spurs starting 11 today, starting in goal in place of Guillermo Vicario, who is out with a hernia injury. The other change sees Destiny Udogie come in to the left-hand side of the Tottenham defence. Mickey van de Ven will move more centrally and Udogie will be on the left. So the Tottenham side will be Antonin Kinski in goal, a back four of Pedro Porro, captain Christian Romero, Mickey van de Ven, and on the left Destiny Udogie. They've gone to three in midfield, interestingly enough. Into the side come Lucas Bergvall and Conor Gallagher instead of Pap Sarr and Matthijs Tel. They'll be in that three alongside Archie Gray, one of the standout performers in a rather dire Tottenham season so far. And that front three, as I mentioned, Colomwani and Richarlison will nominally be either side of Dominic Solanke up top. But what of the hosts, who themselves would have probably settled at the start of the season to be in touch with a chance of staying up? Instead, they find themselves almost in comfortable mid-table, needing just 8 more points to guarantee survival. They've interestingly changed both of their fullbacks. Nordi Mukiele comes into the side, as does Reinildo Mandava. They're on the right and left, respectively. Interestingly, dropping out of the starting 11 today is Northern Ireland international Trey Hume, who started 29 games for Sunderland in the Premier League this season but is on the bench this afternoon. His accumulation of yellow cards of late probably playing a factor in that, but it looks like Regis Libéry is looking to pack the midfield. Enzo Lefebvre comes in this afternoon for Shamsine Tabli, who is dropping to the bench, the Moroccan international. He's been in sparkling form, including that goal at St. James's Park as well, just prior to the international break. And the other change, a key one for Sunderland today as well, Robin Roofs is back in goal after missing out recently with a hamstring injury. So that's starting 11 for the hosts, Sunderland. They will start with a 4-2-3-1 with Roofs in goal, a back four of Mukiele, Luko 9, Alderete and Mandava in midfield, then Granit Xhaka, their captain, Noah Siddiqui, and in front of them, Chris Rigg, Diarra, Enzo Lefebvre and Brian Brobbey. The kickoff here, as I say, John, coming up at 2 p.m. And how are your nerves?
Resigned, Richie. I think resigned is my feeling, to be honest. How do you assess it? How do you assess both teams going into this?
It'll be key to how Spurs start this game, because they've looked so shot on confidence prior to these matches. I mean, you look at their recent results, they've been absolutely dreadful, save for that draw at Anfield a few weeks back, the 3-0 defeat at home to Forest, the 3-1 defeat at home to Crystal Palace, a 2-1 loss away to Fulham. They'll be somewhat delighted, I think, that they're away from home, that their home was sacrificed for a rather dire heavyweight contest, and that they can essentially start again under their third manager of the season in Roberto De Zerbi. He's had time to work with this squad, something that probably wasn't afforded to Igor Tudor during his harum-scarum 44 days in charge of Spurs, and that work will have to pay off starting this afternoon. But as I say, they're inside that dotted line at the bottom of the table, and the need to clamber out quickly, with the likes of West Ham finding form at a crucial part of the season. The rain has just spread here to the northeast of England as well, John, so that could well play a factor here in greasing up the surface before kickoff at 2.
Okay, Richie McCormack, thanks so much. Ahead of the Sunderland Spurs game, just looking through the teams for the other matches that kick off at 2. Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa, crucial game. Forest unchanged. And Villa have Lindelof and Tielemans coming into their side today. For Crystal Palace, up against Newcastle, Henderson back in the Palace goal. Munoz is in as well with Jeremy Pino. And for Newcastle, a number of changes in defence. Livermento and Chow back into the team. Miley and Tonali into the midfield positions. Jacob Murphy captaining the side with William Osula getting a start up front, Shane.
Yeah, just to mention those other games I said, of course, Arsenal's 2-1 defeat to Bournemouth yesterday in the Premier League. Liverpool also gave their Champions League qualification hopes a boost with a 2-0 victory over Fulham at Anfield. Everton scored a late equaliser to draw 2-2 at Brentford, while Brighton were 2-0 winners away to strugglers Burnley. In the Scottish Premiership, Hearts know they'll go into the Scottish Premiership split on top of the table after coming from behind to beat Motherwell 3-1 yesterday. Defending champion Celtic kept the pressure on with their 1-0 win against St Mirren. They moved up to second ahead of Rangers, who were underway against Falkirk from midday. And that game, having been 2-0 down in that one, Rangers scored 4 goals in 16 minutes to now lead 4-2. Falkirk 2, Rangers 4, with 65 minutes on the watch in that game in the Scottish Premiership. To rugby, Ireland head coach Scott Beaman says they're hungry to get better quickly after losing to England on the opening day of the Guinness Women's Six Nations. The world champions won 33-12 in front of a record crowd of 77,000 people at Twickenham. Aaron King and Anna McGann scored tries for Ireland in the second half. Ireland head coach Scott Beaman, speaking to Susanna Mullen for Off the Ball, was keen to stress his side's improvements in the last couple of years.
I would say we were very confident that we knew we were a different group coming here. The atmosphere, the vibe, if you like, arriving to the stadium and seeing the occasion, the crowds, what have you, the girls were energised, not daunted, and we were pretty confident that would happen because they were young and inexperienced. Now they're still young, but with experience. So they've been through some stuff, that 88-10, I think it was. That occasion, people can learn from it. You look at how composed Anna is out there today on the back of that game 2 years ago. She's had a World Cup. She's been playing games where we've gone pretty close to France. So last year we were 48 minutes and 7-5 down against the Red Roses. It was disappointing to concede the sort of early scores in the first half, really. Which I would like to think if we get, as we go through this competition, maybe into next year, we can squeeze those errors out, which then hopefully leaves you a tighter scoreboard into that sort of last quarter of the game.
Yep, Ireland head coach Scott Beaman there speaking after their 33-12 defeat to England at Twickenham yesterday in the Guinness Women's Six Nations opener. Also yesterday, Leinster head coach Leo Cullen saying they can expect a different challenge from Toulon in the semi-finals of the Investec European Champions Cup. Cullen's side ran in 6 tries to see off Sale Sharks 43-13 with a strong second half performance at the Aviva Stadium last night. It is the 6th straight season that Leinster have reached the last 4 of the competition. Josh van der Fleer and Alex Usunov both going off injured. Head coach Leo Cullen saying it's too early to determine how long they'll be out, while Connacht's Challenge Cup adventure ended yesterday as well by a 45-22 loss to Montpellier in the quarterfinals.
Bordeaux, Toulouse, what a cracker, 3 o'clock this afternoon. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the quarterfinal is the final, and maybe Leinster will have something to say about that, but that'll be a big elimination.
Yeah, Leinster frustrating and brilliant in equal
were
measures.
Were you there?
No.
For once?
A decision to make yesterday, John.
Oh yeah.
A combination of events meant I wasn't there, but frustrating. I watched every second of it. Frustrating and brilliant in equal measures, like very tight at half time, and then suddenly the shackles come off in the second half and they really show their class. And I think that there is just a giant question mark about, listen, it's a 30-point win. I think you could have looked at the scoreboard and not seen the game and gone, woof, as a team, this is a real statement of intent. And the second half was that.
Last 2 weeks have been uneven for Leinster, but they're in a semi-final, they're at home.
This season has been uneven, I would go.
Maybe they'll finally peak in Bilbao, well, like 8 years ago.
Jack Conan, on Premier afterwards, Premier Sports, says, you know, we've come into this in better form, we've blitzed teams in the quarters and semis and then lost out in the final, so maybe this is the way to do it. There's just a giant question mark as to where they're at.
The attendance, when you're watching on TV, the empty seats, and you can even hear it coming through the radio in our live commentary as well.
I kept on hearing Freddie Mercury through the radio.
Ah, it's bizarre.
Were you had a bit of vinyl going in the background, or?
The AAO thing that comes in over the tunnel. Yeah, it's like a little entertainment number. You know, the Clemens Place Sweet Caroline after.
Oh, your fave.
My favourite tune. But it's
somebody can please explain, 08-7, 9180180, would you please explain the Freddie Mercury vibe around Leinster games? Because I had no idea.
I'm off for a bit of Freddie, yeah.
It's trying to get the crowd involved, but it feels forced. But like, speaking of the crowd, like,
sure, it's all like, I mean, any of those events, any games that you watch where there's a contrived, that's the point.
Yeah.
But listen, it wasn't helped yesterday with a paltry attendance. What was it?
Well, yesterday was 18,833. Last week was 21,491. So 18,000.
Well, 20,000, you see at the RDS, obviously, or anywhere else would look brilliant.
Yeah, but this is the Aviva.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I know. It's just 18,000 for a European quarterfinal.
I think a lot of factors. I think genuinely the weather, the protests, the fact that Leinster were very much expected to win the thing.
Yeah. Just trying to think of a suitable pun.
I just knew by John's face he was coming up with a queen.
Like hearing Freddie Mercury through my speakers is like a radio gaga, you know.
Hey. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
but I do think that there were.
I accept those as reasons, but it's still like, I don't know, like a European quarterfinal.
It'll be full for the semi final.
Where the fair weather fans come back in.
It's 3 weeks not fair weather fans. It's. Any
you literally said the weather was a factor.
I'll grant you that.
But I do take your point. You know, yeah.
Any team you look at, like, you know, the Dublin footballers are not filling out the filling a Croke Park and all on final day with hardcore fans that are at, you know, Kilburn Cup shed. Do you know what I'm saying?
People just thinking to themselves, you know what, we'll beat Edinburgh, we'll beat Sale, we'll see you in the semi. It's a Jeopardy thing, I think.
That's what I mean by fair weather.
It was a miserable.
It cost a lot of money.
Anybody who was like myself at the side of a pitch yesterday for a goal game were reevaluating their decisions in life. It was Baltic. Yeah. So 5:30 on a Saturday is a perfect time for bringing your family along. It ain't so perfect if it's lashing rain and bitterly cold.
Gaelic games, lots going on.
Plenty going on, in fairness, in Gaelic games. Yeah, a few scores to mention. A bit of a classic going on here at the minute on our tellies in the National Camogie League Division 1B final. That game got underway at 12:15 p.m. down at UPMC Nolan Park in Kilkenny. It's Clare 2-11, Dublin 16 points. So Clare with a very narrow 1-point margin in that one. The two goals for Clare, by the way, for the banner scored by Lorna McNamara. The big one then comes at 2:15 p.m. Galway take on Waterford in the Division 1A Camogie League final, standing in the way of Michael Boland's side, and a maiden title for Waterford are the reigning All-Ireland champions. Galway in that one.
Clare have got another goal, by the way. Another goal. 4 points ahead now. So
okay, so it's they're breaking away a little bit, but Clare 3-11, Dublin 16 points. Ellen Casey substitute with the latest of those Clare goals. Also in Gaelic games today in ladies football, there is one game, Division 4 Football League finalist Carlow versus Leitrim. We have in the hurling some games ongoing. Christy Ring round 1 Meath 5 points, Kerry 12 points as the latest score. Also a game got underway at 1 o'clock in the Christy Ring, Donegal 9 points, Wicklow 3, and at 3 o'clock it's Derry against Roscommon. And the men's football, of course, where all of the big action is today, I suppose, in the Ulster Senior Football Championship preliminary round game. What a cracking game for a prelim. Armagh versus Tyrone at 4:15 p.m. this afternoon at the Box Hill Athletic Grounds. You have in the Connacht Senior Football Championships quarterfinals today as well. Sligo against Leitrim is a 3 p.m. start at Markievicz Park, while 8 p.m. this evening, Irish time, New York take on Roscommon at the Gaelic Grounds. And in the Leinster Senior Football Championship preliminary rounds later on today as well, 2:30, Carlow against Wicklow at Netwatch Cullen Park, and Longford taking on Adrian Barry's Westmeath from 3 p.m. at Lennon Brothers Pierce Park.
Can Tyrone turn up today? That's what's a big question after an indifferent league campaign.
Should have mentioned, the Munster Senior Football Championship quarterfinals, Limerick and Cork, and Tip against Waterford, also 2 o'clock this afternoon. So plenty of Gaelic games to keep people up to speed on.
And we will do that until 7 o'clock on air here, Off the Ball Sunday News Talk. Cycling news.
Yeah, just mentioned very quickly, two Irish riders taking on the men's edition of the Paris-Roubaix Monument race today. Dylan Corkery and Ryan Mullen attempting the massive challenge, which sees riders cycling 258.3 kilometres in one day. They'll try and match Sean Kelly's achievement of winning the race back in 1984. That got underway around noon. Lara Gillespie leads the Irish challenge in the women's version, which starts later. Fiona Mangan, Mia Griffin and Caoimhe O'Brien also on the start list. In boxing, Tyson Fury returned to the sport after 16 months away to beat Arslanbek Makhmudov at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium last night after securing a unanimous points decision over the Russian. He next called out his longtime rival Anthony Joshua, who was there watching the fight. And one interesting story as well from the world of sport today as well. A club in Germany have made history by becoming the first to appoint a woman to manage a men's team in one of Europe's top five leagues. Marie-Louise Etta has been named as interim head coach of Bundesliga side Union Berlin. The 34-year-old will take on the role for the rest of this season, having been announced as the manager of the club's women's side from this summer.
All photos by Maximus Paul Tennant on the front and back pages today. Adrian Barry after the Grand National win at Aintree for Willie Mullins and Paul Tennant yesterday. So That was a big moment for JP McManus, the owner, as well. What was the best writing ahead of your the FM segment we're going to play with Alison Miller and Orla McElroy later?
Bruff Scott was very good on set. Right. Very accessible for plebs like myself, John, who are casual at best supporters of horse racing. Very good. Oftentimes I find reports of matches or events like that can be very functional. In this minute this happened, in this minute the other thing happened, and his was a report on the race that was anything but functional. It was exceptional writing with great context around it. A lot on the rugby, obviously, the opening game of the Six Nations, on Leinster as well, and on the golf, and it's a publisher's nightmare, obviously, given the timeline last night. As you well know, it's really hard to file good copy, as you have done yourself. Conor McKeown very much bucks that trend with his hold of
very funny
the
piece.
Independent. It's always good. It's always good.
It's a laugh out loud piece. We can't even talk about it. I don't think on the radio. But
it's a day by day account of his week of even getting to the Masters. Talks about, you know, the cancellation of his original flight, and then when he eventually gets rebooked on the transatlantic flight, I sit beside a nice couple from Arkansas, one of whom proceeds to watch videos of their dog for most of the spin, no earphones. Deep vein thrombosis, take me now. Right. It's great stuff. It really is. He talks about the gnomes.
Yes.
You got a gnome, didn't you? Or you tried
to? My sister said, get me a gnome. That's your mission. Yeah.
They're a recent-ish phenomenon, but a phenomenon they are.
About 10 years. Somebody had the whole set on sale when I was over there for $16,000. Jeez. They're $50. Jeez. They only have 100 of them a day in the merchandise tent. Remember, everything you get at the Masters, you can't get anywhere else in the world. My and I got a gnome for my sister, and it was like a military operation, to be honest, to get the gnome. But we got the gnome, but there's about five gnomes left. When I ran like Willy Wonka store to get the gnome, got the gnome, brought it back in the luggage, didn't get damaged on the way home. Must have had about 10 polo shirts, a Christmas bauble for
a
my
nice zippy half zip.
Yeah, a Christmas bauble because my sister collects baubles for the Christmas tree. Glassware, sweaters. Balls, flags.
Value wise, so we know the pimento cheese is cheap. Are the mementos just as cheap?
Everything is dirt cheap at Augusta because it costs so much money to get in. Mm. I paid my own way, it cost me $5,000. So that's $5,000 I ever spent, though.
This piece is brilliant. It is about the gnomes and about other things. It looks like even Augusta themselves are not sure.
No,
Fred Ridley, the chairman, was saying that he's not even sure if there's something they should be doing because of the 16K that you were talking about.
The gnomes has got nothing to do with the gnomes. It's the fact that there's a limitation on how many people can get it. Yeah. So people don't want to stampede over each other. It's like phenomenons about, I went to like a Rome last year, and there's a place where there's sandwiches on TikTok, and the line was about an hour to queue. And we know that in Dublin it happens here and other establishments as well. Yeah. So look, there's the human psychology is an amazing thing. But
And what's the sandwich like?
You don't really want to know what's in it, but it tastes beautifully.
Okay.
It just kind of there's kind of a spice to it. You can probably try and make it at home, but these are kind of mass produced. But it's a kind of a spicy paste. It's almost like a cheese spread.
Because that Dublin pizza thing you're talking about, I don't get it.
Well, I don't get the fact that they've got another beautiful branch elsewhere in the city and there's no queue.
But it's a nice slice of pizza. I would probably go much further than that.
No.
I wouldn't be queuing around the corner for it.
Yeah, I might actually be if I'm hungry, but
John, I think this conversation is more your cue for the garden gnomes.
I think this conversation is nearly over. Adrian and Shane, thank you so much for the news round on Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. Got to take a break. Come back in a moment with Brian Kerr to build up to Tottenham, away to Sunderland in the Premier League. Stay with us.